it's time to go out and...
from a very famous nightclub at the end of the world. I'm Mike Rupert. You know that. It is Sunday, March the 18th, 2012, and sitting right next to me in this famous nightclub at the end of the world is Carolyn Baker. Say hi, Carolyn.
Hey there, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. We're going to have a really intense show tonight. You all have been liking it when I do the Raw, when I just let it hang out. So Carolyn and I are going to do that together tonight, and it's a very important night. It is a very momentous night because it is clear that against all reason and all logic, it is clear that even in spite of the fact that United States and Israel know the consequences that the decisions have been made to start an attack on Iran directly, which is imminent. And we're going to go through why that is so obvious for those of you who have not had time to pay attention to CollapseNet this last week or the news that's coming in from around the world. Let's start with Afghanistan, because that is key to understanding what is unfolding now vis-a-vis Iran. About a week ago now, a little over a week, there was a massacre in Kandahar, which the United States disingenuously and not credibly blames on the work of a lone deranged gunman, albeit deranged as a result of three combat tours. Bullshit. It is not possible for one man to have committed that atrocity, to have walked out in unfriendly territory alone in the middle of the night, carried enough ammunition, the chemicals to set the body on fire, moved the bodies. And I was saying clearly about a week ago that it was probably at least two squads, or two serials involved, one to do the killing and one for protection. And there are multiple reports that have been reported on RT, Russia Today, or on Press TV and other credible news sources that a lot of people in Pakistan, including President Hamid Karzai, do not believe for a minute that one guy did this. It's not possible. The rage in Afghanistan is intense, and the fallout has been, what's the word, vigorous or vehement. We had a member of Afghan military drive a car onto the base where Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, was speaking, and set his car on fire, trying to get to Panetta's plane to blow it up. We have had some suicide bombings. We have had, and as a result, ISAF forces, according to several stories we had on the World News Desk this week, have retreated from remote base camps, fire base camps, or special forces camps to the safety of larger fortifications. In other words, under siege. In other words, in retreat. And the United States is definitely in retreat in Afghanistan, as Pakistan has refused to open the overland routes to resupply ISAF. And the U.S. has been getting hammered around the world. Now, in the first abortive attempt to launch World War III, which actually was a war because several Iranian military installations were blown up and Syrian pilots massacred, the Pakistani government cut off all supplies to the ISAF forces, and lessons were learned. But now ISAF is crumbling. But it became clear then in that run-up that the U.S. forces in the western part of Afghanistan were intended to be there probably to launch missiles and other probably high-end weapons into targets inside eastern Iran that might not be reachable. So in other words, an eastern front was necessary. The maps we made even from the wilderness 8 years ago show that we had surrounded Iran and Saudi Arabia, 60% of the known oil on the planet in the Persian Gulf. On top of that, global economic activity has fallen off a cliff. I'm not going to give you a lot of details on that. If you haven't noticed, or if you haven't noticed that gasoline's over $5 in some places and the price is still rising, and all Iran has to do is now issue another big oil embargo and the price of oil, gasoline now $10 a gallon in Paris, will multiply in price, and that will be the death knell for the European economy. And the reason why Iran is almost certainly going to engage in some strenuous embargoes with Spain and Greece and Italy, or Spain and Italy especially, being heavy users of Iranian oil, they're going to do that because in an absolutely unprecedented move from any way you look at it, but in the history of sanctions, the United States government has successfully, through Brussels, denied Iran access to the SWIFT money transferring system. And if you know anything about moving funds internationally, nothing moves internationally without SWIFT, especially not in dollars. That's a serious blow to Iran. We do not know how they are going to respond to that, but that was a financial nuclear option. It was almost exactly the same as the it's kind of reversed in one respect, which I'm sure you'll figure out, as the 1941 oil embargo against Japan, which prevented Japan from receiving oil. This is the exact same model, except for this is intended to deny Iran the ability to receive the proceeds of the sale of its oil. Now, already Iran had been pretty successfully working around U.S. sanctions, figuring ways to deal with India and other countries outside the U.S. dollar, accepting gold, accepting crops, and that is a threat to U.S. dollar hegemony. And there is a theme being repeated here. It is a theme that we saw with Saddam Hussein, who was threatening to leave the dollar to price Iraqi oil when the euro was viable. Muammar Gaddafi was going to price his Libyan oil outside of dollars, and now Iran, a much more powerful country that has already humiliated the United States, is opening an oil bourse day after tomorrow that will not accept dollars. And world power is obviously shifting from west to east. So what have we seen recently to indicate? Well, a third aircraft carrier battle group, the Enterprise, which is just about to be mothballed, that would be a good one to sink, blow up, and blame on the Iranians, has joined two other carrier groups in the Persian Gulf. There have been a number of mobilizations, but one of the things that stands out most is that Saudi Arabia has suddenly closed its embassy in Damascus, Syria this week. And has now been openly providing some serious quantities of arms to rebel groups that are inspired by Western intelligence to bring about the overthrow of Hafez al-Assad in Syria. And the reason that is essential is because no attack on Iran can take place without first a regime change in Syria, because Syria and Iran have a mutual defense pact. And Syria borders Israel, and Lebanon and Hezbollah can seriously hurt Israel, and so can Syria. So, the way it looks, it's shaping up at some time this week. Carrier strikes into Iran. Airstrikes will be launched from the three carrier battle groups, and probably from a smaller, if there is one. There is not a close air base on the Eastern Front. So the carrier planes will do the attacking in Iran, and the Israeli Air Force, my bet is, will be used immediately to devastate the Syrian military, and also to do, like we saw in the early 1980s, an invasion and occupation of Lebanon and probably Jordan as well. Now, backing this up, we know from the first start of World War III, that Russia has said unequivocally that it will continue to arm Syria. It has a defense pact with Syria. Russia has said, made it a clear policy, that if the United States attacks Iran, it will side with Iran. China, obviously, is committed to siding with Iran. It cannot live without Iranian oil. And China actually has some state-owned oil facilities inside Iran. And so what we are looking at is the absolute worst-case scenario, the case scenario where everybody just reaches out and hits the fuck-it button. The United States is losing, and so is Israel. And I had some hope earlier in the week that we might see some resistance, especially from around the world, to really finally confront the U.S. government with the clearly winnable case on September the 11th. Because the countries that went along with it at the time, everybody knows the U.S. government did it, but they had more to lose by telling the truth then. But now they have nothing to gain by helping to protect that lie, and they see a rabid beast out here in the form of a U.S.-Israeli war machine that has run amok. And if you read my book, Crossing the Rubicon, you will know very clearly that what I described in Crossing the Rubicon was a U.S.-Israeli war machine run amok. I tried to warn everybody about this. Now, there's a big difference now in that if you mentioned Israel right after 9/11, you were automatically thrown into a camp that was arguing that Israel did the whole thing. Well, I made it very clear in Crossing the Rubicon that that is not a case, but Israel was a major player, and it remains. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we are at the point of madness. And it's very clear, with not only with the closure of the embassies and the deployment of groups, battle groups, and everything else that is taking place, that this war seriously appears to be on. Major bombings broke out in Syria yesterday, in Damascus and Aleppo today, targeting government buildings. We had not seen that in the Syrian quote-unquote uprising thus far. So the blows are being thrown, and we will have tomorrow and Tuesday, Wednesday, we will know what's going on that quickly, but it will happen that suddenly we will look up and we will find ourselves in a major world war with a world power, Iran, and Russia, China, and this is it's the worst. But the human race has been perfectly free to commit suicide. We've had plenty of warnings along the way. Now, before I get to Carolyn Baker, let me just add a couple other things real quick. The White House yesterday issued an executive order, National Defense Resources Preparedness Executive Order, issued, signed March 16th. It is an order of the president relating to Defense Production Act of 1950. It has the force of law, but it is not a law. But then the U.S. government doesn't follow the law anymore anyway. But the U.S. government is behaving remarkably like Nazi Germany, which saw fit in the years before World War II to pass the Nuremberg race laws. The bastards in Germany, the Nazi bastards in Germany, set out and passed laws for years indicating and telling everybody exactly what they were going to do out of some crazy psychic need to say that they've rationalized, and that's what's playing out. So we've had from the Patriot Act all the way through NDAA and now this to understand. And what this executive order says is that the United States government to prepare for war can take your water, your land, your food. They can put you into slave labor. They do not have to compensate you. They can take any resources that they need to. Now executive orders like this have been on the books since the 1980s. I started writing about them in the early 1990s. It came under continuity of government work done by Oliver North and all kinds of names we came to know and love during Iran-Contra. Well, all the people that were warning, for all of you out there who didn't get it at the time, this is what we were trying to warn you about. So there's a lot of people freaking out here in the world. And as I look over at Carolyn Baker, who is the author of two incredible books, Sacred Demise and Navigating the Coming Chaos, and she's a legend. She writes for us at CollapseNet every week, and she's on a busy tour right now. She happens to be in Sebastopol, so she's sitting here. So, Carolyn.
Yeah, Mike.
You know, I've kind of reached this place where I'm taking an attitude lately. Screw it, I'm an elder, and everybody's had all the warnings they're going to get. Does that resonate with you at all?
Absolutely. You know, you and I were talking earlier how deja vu this feels in terms of the lead up to the Iraq War in 2003. There's just a very similar mood, and it's very sad. There's kind of a feeling of somberness about it that I'm certainly carrying tonight. And as I think about things like this, I think about the way that indigenous people have responded to this kind of despair, which is the only word I can really think of, by singing songs and telling stories and reading poems and really connecting with nature. And not for the purpose of saving their own butts, which, you know, nobody knows if that's possible, but to really connect with what does this mean for me? What is my purpose in this? Am I looking at my own demise? And if so, you know, today I published on my website the five things that people most regret when they die. And, you know, nobody regrets that they didn't work more, and nobody regrets that they didn't make more money. But there are a lot of things that have to do with meaning and purpose that they do regret that they've missed.
Mm-hmm.
So in that spirit, I want to just read a short poem by wonderful ecologist Wendell Berry.
Go for it.
When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought or grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world, and I'm free. So this is a time for songs, stories, mm-hmm. poems, mm-hmm. creating beauty, and sitting against a tree and weeping, or laying with your belly on the ground and weeping, or laughing or dancing, and making meaning of this insanity, well, making meaning for yourself and your community of this insanity.
Yeah, there's a part of me that reacts to trying to make meaning of insanity as like a futile effort, if you understand what I'm
saying.
You can
only make meaning for myself.
Exactly, yeah,
yes.
to extract
yeah.
something
yeah. Yeah.
From it. That is useful. And I have to share this personally because you and I have been on this field a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Together, and we've been through some big ups and some big ugly downs. And
yep.
some. And but as it became clear to me early Saturday morning as I was reading the stories about what's going on, that the die has been cast. And we've had the stories that the Israeli parliament has voted 8-6 to give, and the U.S. has given a. I mean, it's like so clear. I felt the weight that I have carried for since I first, in 1975, discovered that CIA was bringing drugs into the country, and somehow this weight fell on me, and I felt that weight be lifted. In other words, what the message that I got was that that I've come the distance and delivered a message honorably and clearly, but that I was have been kind of like, okay, you did everything you could do. And we were talking before the show, and I had a great Facebook exchange on this week, basically I can hear Mother Earth saying right now, you have had every warning. You have been told, you have been warned, you meaning the human race, you have never chosen the pain and the suffering that is always a part of growing up. You have never, and time's up. I can hear that. And what I see is that the human race has mistaken her unforgiving, her unconditional love, and her endless ability to forgive as weakness.
Well, you know, you and I were talking earlier, and you just mentioned a moment ago the word elder. And I believe that every single person who's listening to us, who is aware of collapse, who is preparing on any kind of conscious level, has a job right now, and that is to be an elder, which means a steward of this process of decline. You could be 28, you could be 48, you could be 88. It's not about age, it's about wisdom. So there's work to be done. There's talents and skills that are needed from you right now. And this is the time for the elders to come forth, whether we got white hair or no hair.
You know, that reminds me of a story I heard. It was about a platoon of paratroopers who were dropped into an enemy zone. And, like, everybody in the platoon was killed except for one private, and the company commander shows up and says, okay, first sergeant, get your platoon together. And he says, wait a minute, I'm only a private. He said, not anymore, you're not.
Right.
And so those of us who are further down the road of preparation are indeed now guides for those who will come after us and seek our help. And on that note, I'd say, you know, we play a song every week. And Carolyn, tonight I'm going to play a song that I had never intended to play publicly because it's an extremely personal song for me. It's one that really reveals a lot of my innards. But now that, you know, we might be at the end here and I might be either locked up or whatever in a short period of time, and at this moment, I kind of want to share some of the deepest parts of me with the fans who have been here so long. So the story of this song, it's a new white trash song, which you've never heard. And it was written by a guy named Jim Sullins, who had been in a band with me back in 1982. And God, he's a wonderful guy. He's written for Ray Charles, Sheena Easton, Julio Iglesias. He was a great rhythm, just a wonderful human being. And we've been friends all these years. And when I was doing New White Trash, Jim sent me a track of some of the most beautiful piano chords I had ever heard in my life. And he was kind of like scatting a melody. He had, you know, like he had some of the melody there, but that was enough for me to get the feel of the song. And he had this incredible hook line on My Back Road. And it became a 50-50 song. There's only two things making noise on this. That's Jim Sullins on the piano, and that's me singing the lyrics that I wrote and the melody that I finished off. And here's a confession. This is a soppy love ballad. I'll warn everybody right now, but what I wound up doing, and I'm sure it's no surprise, is I wrote the song that I always wanted a woman to sing to me. But I'm singing it, so you're going to have to bear with that. Here's On My Back Road.
Sometimes love leaves a glance, passing by my fence, and I just look down at my hard-headed ground, and I hate to see you go, baby, hate to see you go, yet you just slowed down. Turned and looked around. Sometimes love looks back to see its track, and I hate to see you go, baby, hate to see you go. And when the time comes to mend your heart, I'll be there and I'll do my part. And you'll see that you ain't lost nothing at all. There ain't nothing like you on my back road. On my back road. Sometimes love takes a chance. There's a different dance. Does the fire still burn? Baby, make that turn and never look away, baby. Never look away. Winter with me. Leave your winter with me. Look into my eyes. Till the night yields unto the day, until the hurt begins to go away, till my loving brings your living back around. 'Cause there ain't nothing like you on my back road. On my back road. Back Road.
That was On My Back Road from New White Trash. You can find that song and 36 other originals at newwhitetrash.com. Say hello to my friend Dougie Lewis and all my bandmates, Andy Kravitz, Kerr Tompkins and Chris Vigard and Michael, everybody who was part of that project. I thank you so much for letting me have that experience in life, and I'm happy to share that with you guys tonight. Okay, we got a couple minutes now, Carolyn, before the station break. We're talking about this feeling that's in the air, which is palpable, and I totally agree. The feeling is very similar to what I felt on 9/11. The feeling is very similar to right before they launched the invasion of Iraq. But we can see that it's fundamentally different this time.
Yeah.
This is kind of an all-in moment. It's been brought up that on Facebook a lot that people are noticeably starting to behave delusionally. I mean, people out there are seeing people reacting. Mm-hmm. I got a communication from Luis Mora, our operations manager in Los Angeles. We love Luis. We call him El Jefe. That people are just flooding surplus stores and they're buying all the survival gear they can. And there's a lot of latecomers to the party. Now my assessment has always been that when this point arrived, what we were going to see was exponential increase in delusional, aberrant, absolutely nonsensical behavior. Does that fit with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll see emotions really go off the charts, all kinds of emotions, yeah.
And so that's one of the main reasons why it became clear to me that the major cities are the most dangerous places to be. But it's just a sheer factor of population density. And it's not possible to know who's going to crack and who's not. So the question for many people is, what do I do now? Well, tomorrow for all CollapseNet members, I am recording an emergency action alert for our CollapseNet members. But there are some things that can be said. One is, don't try to make up for 5 years of lost time in 10 minutes.
Right.
Accept your starting place right now as where you are and what you have. I outed myself as having spent a long time in 12-step on the show last week because there's so many great parallels.
Yeah.
And there's so many lessons to be learned. But one of the most important concepts that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I use this in my speech, I believe, in Portland on 9/11, is the concept of change without punishment. One of the most important things from a survival standpoint that you can do is to not blame yourself for any condition that exists now that you could have done something about in the past. And to get out of that completely. You start with a fresh slate, and every military guy I've ever known, you know, that's the way everybody's trained anyway. You lost something, well, then you pretend you never had it. If you, you know, and what other things can people do psychologically just to liberate, we got a minute and a half before the break, just to liberate their thinking as they go into this?
Well, one of the things that's going to be up on my site this week at carolynbaker.net, I have an audio that's going to be about 2 hours, and it's called Mining the Black Gold, Healing Through the Negative Emotions. So I talk about what can we do with fear, anger, grief, despair, and joy to help us ground in the face of this chaos, which I'm now calling collapse psychosis.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you were a clinician and you were, think about this as we go into the station break, how would you define from a clinician standpoint what collapse psychosis is? We'll bring that back up right after these messages.
Why me, you ask? And then you know you're running with the new white trash. You say, why me, you ask? And then you know you're running with the new white trash.
Baby, you are running with the new white trash tonight, because we are all new white trash. Yeah, you don't have to be white to be new white trash, by the way. I just thought I'd let everybody know out there in case there's some color in the audience. And it's always a good thing if there is. I don't know where that came from. We're back with Carolyn Baker on the Sunday before, who knows, the end of the world. Bring it on. It's just, we're tired of waiting. We were talking before the break, Carolyn, about collapse psychosis, and I left you with the question, as a clinician, how would you define it?
Well, I would define it as a denial of those emotions that naturally come up as we're facing this kind of crisis. You know, so we deny our fear, and we cover that over with rage, or we cover it over with, you know, mood altering, or whatever we do. We deny our anger. We deny our grief. We deny our despair. And those are feelings we need to feel and talk about with other people, because the word emotion has the word motion in it, which means it's not going to get stuck. It's going to move if we allow ourselves to go with it. So, you know, we're seeing around us all different sorts of manifestations of crazy behavior, suicidal behavior, destructiveness, because people don't want to feel these things. And feeling it is part of growing up and becoming an elder.
I just want to emphasize that what Carolyn's saying is that the worst thing you can do when you are afraid is to deny that you are afraid.
Absolutely.
The worst thing that you can do when you are feeling sadness is to deny that you are feeling sadness.
Yes.
Feelings are not necessarily facts, but feelings must be felt and acknowledged. And Carolyn and I both know from our own particular personal journeys that there is a lot of work that one puts into being able to recognize and deal with feelings. So if you're out there and you are feeling afraid, it's okay.
Absolutely.
You should be afraid.
Absolutely.
If you're out there and you know, don't deny any of the feelings. Honor them inside and say, okay, I feel this way, but here's what I'm going to do.
Right.
One of the best lines I ever heard in AA was, they don't put you in jail for thinking crazy. They put you in jail for acting crazy.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not what you think, it's what you do.
Yeah.
That matters. And the doing now for all of us is going to mean just about everything. Given the fact that, do you remember when I came up with the line, at some point somebody's going to hit the switch on the wearing blender puree and you're not going to be able to recognize it?
Right.
Okay, so we're at the puree moment here, which means several things. It means that certainly everything is in place to shut down CollapseNet and to arrest me. The Nazis have put all the laws in place. According to the authority vested in the NDA, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so we don't know how much or what we're going to be able to do now, and a lot of us will find ourselves on our own with our own lifeboats. Okay, talk about how you adjust to that, like taking an inventory or surveying your surroundings.
Journaling is really a good practice. Spending time in nature as well. And if you can do both, that's a really, really grounding, nurturing experience. Maybe you don't have anybody to talk to, but you can write these things down. You can talk to nature. You can talk to the trees. And if you do both, you're going to really ground yourself in surprising ways. It's really amazing what can happen.
All right. Let's say that tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, the headlines come on. Airstrikes have been launched against Iran. Russian forces are mobilizing, and we're in that place. Is there something simple that someone who's, like, overwhelmed at that particular moment can do to center themselves, aside from going outside, to look at tangible things, to look at tangible priorities? How would you do that?
Well, I would certainly recommend at the top of the list trying to talk to somebody else who's afraid, even if they don't understand collapse. At least be able to sit down with somebody and say, you know, I'm really afraid. And you have to go through maybe 20 people until you find somebody else who says, shit, I'm afraid too. You know.
But as soon as you do, you're twice as strong as you were
exactly,
before.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
That's the first thing I'd recommend.
All right. I'm in complete agreement with that. We can open it up for calls now. I've got a couple other things I want to pursue with Carolyn while she's here. But if you'd like to ask Carolyn a question tonight, the number is 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. I want to go back and talk about 9/11.
Sure.
because you saw a lot of what happened there.
Oh yeah.
And what I have seen lately is a big shift. The so-called 9/11 truth movement that was hijacked by people like Alex Jones and a lot of dissidents, we all saw clearly, has kind of like lost its wings. And yet we have seen press TV from Iran did a very cogent and not anti-Semitic piece, very clear to say that, on 9/11. I know that in Germany and there's a major publication in Asia, I don't think I want to say more yet, they're doing a major large article on the insider trading that took place on 9/11, which was largely my work. I was on that right away after the attacks. And there's a lot of other things. But what I saw was that there is a cogent international voice that's starting to rise. Now, it didn't take me long to figure out that if the United States wouldn't go to war over anything else, the United States would blow up the whole world for being exposed for its role in September 11th. And that's happening largely because the United States has nothing to offer there. We aren't benefiting our allies. We are seen to be toothless in the world, and it's clear where the power is shifting. So the countries that went along with that steamroller after September the 11th, even Russia, now look at a world where it's not necessary to keep that bargain. So, and for all this stuff that those of us who were the early pioneers on September the 11th, the Michelle Chosudovskys, the Dan Hopsickers, and Dan went on a raging campaign, and he campaigned against me. It had no merit to it. He got me an IRS audit. But I swear to God, Daniel Hopsicker did some of the most amazing work I have ever
done,
investigating work around the flight schools in Venice, directly tying, some of the hijackers to the U.S. military.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important to honor those people now.
Yep,
Paul Thompson.
Yep.
All of us.
Nafis Mosaddegh.
Nafis was in there earlier. There's some issues between him and Michelle Chosudovsky, but he was a contributor. But but there are people who did the early investigative work that has not been refuted since. And what a long journey it's been for us. And I found the rage coming up over 9/11. Everything that I had stomached over the course of all the years, the decades since then, having the computers smashed, the personal attacks, the Norman Solomons and David Corns, and a lot of that rage came up because crossing the Rubicon really was crossing the Rubicon. Because at the end of crossing the Rubicon, I left open a number of scenarios, but the worst case scenario was that this United States Israeli criminal power bloc, Zionist Israeli criminal power bloc, has nothing to do with Jewish,
right.
Okay, was out of control, and that it could lead to a global nuclear confrontation over energy and resources. And I wrote those words in early 2004. And here we are.
Right.
I'm going to give it back to you in a second. I'm kind of doing a therapy because I'm looking right at you. We're sitting here in this wonderful nightclub.
Yeah,
My dog Rags is sitting here pacing the floor, cheering everybody up. I just needed to share that, too, because that pain for that decade has been. And you know that I was suicidal when I came back from Venezuela. And what happened in Ashland, Oregon, as a result of the Tillman scandal.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know, it's been admitted by the Ashland Police Department that the Ashland Police Department falsified a police report. They did it in front of my lawyer, Ray Coleman, in front of Jenna Orka. Then they admitted that they improperly and illegally leaked that report to a newspaper editor, Scott Bolsinger, at the Daily Tidings, which was used to print. And it led to that. And that's the pure evil that many of us, and use me as an emblem for everybody who suffered. I almost want to think that I'm feeling now a great relief over that is if I don't need the resolution.
Right.
I think what matters is that I survive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look what you're doing today. Yeah.
Well, I sure am pissing some people off.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh,
I got an email coming in. All right. Wait. No, I got it. No, it's a chat. We have a call. We have two callers. All right. I'm going to shut up. Ed from L.A., are you there? What do you want to know, dude?
Well, hi, Michael.
And hi.
I just wanted to say that I think for myself personally, sometimes I can become too inundated with all of this. I mean, you've got the solar storms coming, and you've got dire predictions with solar storms, and if you've got a worldwide blackout, you've got a different kind of nuclear power plant scenario. And, you know, I'm a full-time caregiver to my girlfriend who had a stroke June 13th, 2010, and she's not very mobile. So, you know, Gary Noll has talked about, well, you have to have an escape point. You have to be away from these power plants. But in all reality, she really can't be moved. I mean, and it's just, I think for me, the question I have to ask, you know, between our fascist government and between what you're talking about with Iran and the solar storms and the 12 tipping points, I sort of have this almost fatalistic attitude, like, I'm gonna do everything I can. I've got water stored. I'm storing food. But I almost feel like, you know what? I'm doing the best I can, but this is all I can do. And I got to pull away from some of this stuff. Like the Lakers are on right now. I might go watch them for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And
I just get inundated, and then I start percolating because I feel helpless because I can't move my girlfriend very far. We don't have another place. We don't have two places to live, you know, a place that's away from a nuclear power plant. So I'm almost fatalistic about it. If God's going to take me and it's going to be because of a nuclear meltdown or if it's going to be 12 tipping points or something else, then so be it. I almost have to be fatalistic. I'm sorry to say that, but that almost lets me off the hook.
Well, I absolutely believe that we all in this case, we all have to look at, whether it's climate change, peak oil, whatever, we have to look at our own demise. We have to be willing to look at our own death. You know, the poet Rumi says, die before you die. So that's a really good practice for all of us. So enjoy yourself. Go watch the Lakers. Eat some ice cream. Give yourself a break from time to time.
Yeah, and let me just throw in there and say that one of the greatest spiritual teachings I have, too, is that there are times when all you can do is ride the tiger.
Yeah.
It does not matter how gracefully you do it. One of my great favorite cartoons was Calvin and Hobbes. There's five frames. Calvin trips on the top of a hill, and there's all these frames of his upside down, inside out, bouncing off of trees. He lands at the bottom of the hill and goes, ta-da. Allow yourself to be and feel sloppy.
Yeah.
Give yourself lots of room for that. It'll give you lots of strength. But then in the end, all any of us can do is to surrender to the situation, because the situation is the boss. We got more callers. Nick from Ontario, are you there?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Mike. I just want to thank you and Carolyn for everything that you've done so far. I'm actually reading Carolyn's book right now. But
cool.
Besides the
Which
point,
one? Navigating?
Navigating the Coming Chaos.
Cool.
I think I'm on chapter 5. I'm not sure. What my question is basically is I'm taking a permaculture course in Oregon. Starts in May. It goes for about 5 weeks. Now, I'm just curious because the way you're talking, things are escalating now with Iran and all that stuff. Should I work on going to that course, or should I just work on preparing here now?
When is the course again?
It's a May 21st till June 23rd.
Well, optimistically, I would hope that you would be able to go. I wouldn't cancel.
That's the thing. I'm already signed up. I'm, like, ready to go. I'm working on just going towards there now.
That's something you may never get the chance to do again after May.
Right.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah. And that's knowledge that you need. That's priority. And as a matter of fact, if I was new at this and I had to pick some place I'd want to be, I think I'd like to be right in the middle of a permaculture class when it is, you know?
Not only knowledge, but emotional and spiritual grounding, you know. There's so many pieces of permaculture that we can use in the inner world as well as the outer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to make plans in the middle of a hurricane, you know, but you know, but we do the best we can. But that permaculture training is very, very important. If you can get it, and you know, we'll just say a prayer that the word holds together right. long enough that you do. All right, man, we have another caller, Bill from Georgia. Are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Hi, Bill.
First of all, I just would give you just a big hug.
Thank you.
You're
right.
Awesome, dude, and it's just amazing, and I kind of get what you're about. I guess my question is the powers that be, the central bankers, however you want to talk about it, do they have inside control of Iran? And then the follow-up kind of question, kind of perspective is, it seems like it's not so much about the oil and energy, but more about who controls the world reserve currency.
Okay. First of all, well, let's do the currency thing first. The currency and energy are inextricably, they're Siamese twins. You can't separate them. No, currency is a symbol for the ability to do work. Energy is the ability to do work. No, yeah, but see, Iran just recently blasted oil prices with a threatened embargo to Europe, which caused oil prices to rise $5 in one day. It's about the availability of the supply of oil. Oil is a fungible. In other words, the world is consuming, I think now, 84 million barrels a day, 83, due to economic collapse. There is no spare capacity anywhere. So if you take any oil out of the system, it affects the price of oil everywhere. And Iran is playing that card. And that's the power card that Iran has. Iran says, we'll hold the energy. Watch your economy's tank as oil goes to 130. So you cannot separate the two. They are it's peak oil. So anyway, with that one, what was the first part of your question again? I'm sorry. I want to get on the currency thing. He's gone? Okay. Does anybody remember what the first part of his question was? Carolyn?
Something about the banking control. Do the central bankers control?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be, you need to pose a question that offers a better line, a better opportunity to answer. It's not a yes or no answer. The bankers banking the West, which through dollar hegemony has placed itself in control of things like SWIFT indirectly through Brussels. To that extent, yes, they can hurt Iran. Do they control Iran? No, obviously not. That's the point. They don't control Iran. And in a way, Iran is a surrogate or symbolic of the whole human race. Iran is operating outside the infinite growth monetary paradigm. It is fractional reserve banking, compound interest, and fiat currency. And that's why the beast of infinite growth, the evil beast, must go to any lengths to kill it, even if it means killing everything. Carolyn, you want to jump in on that?
Do we have another question there? I was just wondering if we...
No.
Okay, good.
We are... Go ahead, Bill. Excuse me, you did. You were right. See, Carol's looking over my shoulder.
Well, I hear these little squeegee things on your computer.
Well, that's from the studio in New York, but we do have an email. Whenever you hear the squeegee thing, that's the board operator in New York. Okay, we have an email from Alan. Michael, although I think it may be too late for it, do much good. Have you done much research into Hyperion ECAT LENR devices? Dude, stop asking us stupid questions about stupid last-minute energy. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be picking on you, Alan, but Carolyn and I have heard this question 100 million times. It's a little late even to be asking.
Right.
Sorry. That's something else that I've noticed now. That we should both feel a little freer just to call a spade, say what the deal is, and not worry about being politically correct now, because we don't have time.
Well, that's right. And, you know, it's like all of these last-minute, can we do this? Can we do that? Is there any way to make it better? Is there any way to avoid collapse? No.
No.
You know, in our work, our job, if we're going to be conscious elders and grown-ups, is to embrace collapse, even if it means our own personal death. This is our job, is to embrace this transformation. You know, and we don't know the outcome. But the very last thing we should be doing is trying to fight it or make it better. Now, should we want to save lives? Of course. Should we want to alleviate suffering? Of course. But are we going to stop collapse or climate change or peak oil? Not in this life.
No. You have to surrender to that. And
yeah.
That's why my sound effects here are just over how frustrating it's been to have been so many years in a position to, like, teach spiritual stuff, that you walk toward your fear.
Yeah.
It's the only
exactly.
way. It's
exactly.
the only way. You embrace yeah. that of which you are afraid. I'm seeing a sign saying another caller. Let me see if we got some more information. Another caller. I'm seeing the pen moving on the little Skype screen here. Mm-hmm. Do we have a caller out there? Is anybody else on the line?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, who are you? Where are you from?
Hey, it's Josh from Connecticut.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, Josh.
I have a question for both of you. My first question is this latest bill that seemed to slip through that we heard about all over Facebook today.
It was not a bill. It was an executive order.
Oh, an executive order, right? So it's even
very
even
important
more dangerous.
To make that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of sounds like they're gearing up to just start raiding people's homes, personal property, for anything and everything.
Well, we've been warning you, dude, since they passed the Patriot Act, since
Homeland Security.
We have been screaming that this was coming.
But it's like, where the hell are you hiding your crap, you know?
Uh-huh.
The other thing is I've come to the point where it's like everyone around me, it's like, if you don't see it by now, it's like, I don't know what the hell you're going to do. And I quite frankly, feel extremely alone. You know, I'm on CollapseNet. It just so happens that I seem to be in a major dry spot of awareness.
And that's tough when you're out there by yourself. You need to get some friends. You need to get some allies.
You're not in Las Vegas, are you?
No, he's in
Connecticut.
Oh, Connecticut, sorry. That's the dry spot, baby.
Yeah.
Well, listen, there are a lot of CollapseNet members in Connecticut, but also immediately go find out if there are any Transition U.S. initiatives anywhere
right.
near you.
Right,
go
yeah.
on the Transition U.S. website.
Yep.
Get hooked up with a transition group right now.
Yeah.
Right.
And, of course, you can also locate other members of CollapseNet who are reasonably close to you there. But start building those networks now. I guarantee you, at a transition initiative, you're not going to have to explain what's going on here.
Right. And if we're all still around, I'm going to be in New England the last week of April and the first week in May. If you watch my website for details, you'll see the dates and places, carolynbaker.net.
All right. So, Carolyn, we're down to about 3 minutes to go here.
Okay. I just want to say to folks that are in the Carson City, Reno, Nevada area, please come and be at my events next weekend, public talk, workshop. Go to my website for details, carolynbaker.net. It's all there.
Yeah, Carolyn's on a little tour, and she's in great demand right now. And we're out here doing the elder thing, baby.
Yeah, we are.
You know, and and now we actually may get to spank somebody. I don't know. you know, so we got 2 minutes left, and this may be the last show we do. This
could
may be.
Could be.
You know what? And what?
And you know what? That's cool.
That's fine with me too. You know, and I couldn't be happier than to spend it with an old colleague.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
That we have traveled many, many miles together and seen a lot of awakening.
You betcha.
Occur.
You betcha. That's really exciting.
There is a change of consciousness underway. It looks now as if it's not enough to change the world or to save the world on its course. But faith is the belief in things unseen.
Right.
I'm gonna give you the last minute, but I think one of the business might one of the best lines from AA are coming up. Somebody had to come up to me once, an old timer when I was new, and it kind of gently punched me in the arm, and he says, "Dude, miracles can happen without your permission." That was rude.
I want to say a few words from Rainer Maria Rilke, the German poet. This is called Survival of the Soul. What more can we accomplish now than the survival of the soul? Harm and decay are not more present than before, perhaps only more apparent, more visible, and measurable. For the harm which humanity has lived daily since the beginning cannot be increased. But there is increasing insight into humanity's capacity for unspeakable harm and perhaps where it leads. So much in collapse, so much seeking new ways out, room for what new can happen.
Carolyn Baker, if I wind up in jail next week or something else...
I'll come and see you.
No, will you take over the show for me?
Sure, you betcha.
All right, so there it is, guys, you know. If for some reason my number's up, I'm called, and I get to walk through the door and make a passage to another plane, then you're going to be stuck with Carolyn Baker. But you could do a lot worse than that, I got to tell you.
Thanks, Mike.
Listen, it's going to be a hell of a week. Watch us on CollapseNet. Please keep giving us your support with your memberships. Please donate to the CollapseNet special fund. We want to take care of our volunteers and the people who keep us running so that we can stay in this game until the last possible minute on our posts, doing our job. And showing you guys the way. And for all of you out there who have been aware and started even to think about collapse, for all of you who have contemplated peak oil, you are all now elders. Consider it's Pearl Harbor, and you're a private, and all of a sudden you're a sergeant.
Yep.
Well, that's the way it's going to be, because the surest way I have ever found to maintain my own personal sanity when everything else fails was to find somebody else to help.
You betcha.
If you're looking for people you can't make friends, then you find somebody that needs help and you start there.
You betcha, absolutely.
And you watch the magic work. I love each and every one of you, Carolyn Baker.
I love you.
I love PRN. You guys have been fabulous. PRN.FM, Gary Null, everybody. It has been so good being with you. And God willing, and the river don't rise, we will be back with you from a nightclub at the end of the world. Good night.